the hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here in the Skyline Studios of 720 WGN Radio, high above the Chicago River on this late summer day. A little later in the program, we'll talk to Mike Lavatola. Michael has been with me three or four times, I think. I love following the progression of his company, Foxtrot Market. When we first started talking, Foxtrot Market was this, they said they curated fine products like liquors and foods and things, and they would deliver it to your door. It was an online delivery service. They then went into brick-and-mortar stores. They continued to expand. Now I think they're opening their eighth. Maybe we'll talk to Michael about that. Moving into the Dallas area, and just earlier this month opened up a restaurant in Old Town, a cafe of sorts. So Michael will be here to talk about sort of the, you know, we think of everything going from brick-and-mortar to online. His company, in many ways, has gone the opposite direction. We'll check in with Foxtrot Market a little bit later in the program. Speaking of markets, the Dow is currently up 190 points. The NASDAQ is up 20, and the S&P 500 up 14. And to explain that for us, Terry Savage joins us on a phone line.
I can't explain that for you. It's crazy.
It is crazy, isn't it? Try to sort this out for me. I know energy stocks are leading the way today.
But they were down big yesterday. So everything is a little bit mixed up and a little bit illogical. And that's probably because the news on which we're trading is sort of not only illogical, but unbelievable. Are we having a trade deal? Are we not? Are the Chinese about to acquiesce or are they not? All of these aspects of the fundamentals that go into the market are so confusing that the markets themselves, I think, are confused.
So we're up one day, down the next.
Exactly. We've been talking about this for a long time. I know this, and probably the ratings of CNBC might be among the highest they've been since, a decade ago.
Right.
Because everybody is tuning in to hear what everybody's saying. And any opinion is valid for at least 30 minutes until some other news or tweet or a rumor comes out. And I always know that I'm talking to a much different audience, and I refer you back to that comp from a couple of weeks ago, sell down to the sleeping point. We are only 5% from the all-time highs with all of this aggravation. But if it's keeping you up at night, or if a big loss were to materialize, could devastate your retirement plan, you're getting a free get-out-of-jail card right now with every day the market rallies.
Talk to me about the bond prices. The U.S. 30-year bond fell below 2%, I think, low ever. It's recovered a bit from there, but what is it? What should that be telling us?
Well, it means that the United States, despite its huge deficits, can borrow at the lowest rates ever in our history. And yet, what does it really mean in context of the fact that half the government debt in Europe is trading at negative interest rates? So even while our long-term rates are low, hey, and by the way, that means your mortgage rates are low, and low interest rates typically mean, oh, that's good for stocks. Nobody wants to be in bonds. Let's go buy stocks with their dividends. All of those things are completely in a different universe now with European government debt yielding negative. People putting money in banks and in the government bonds there because they're so afraid of investing it anywhere else. You asked me to do a logical analysis of what's going on, and I started by saying this is illogical, and these times are very different. Negative interest rates in half the world, Europe trying to print and saying they will to get their economies going again, our economy and our stock market near 5% from its highs, our economy still chugging along, although we're overdue for a recession. This should scare you. Not if you're 27 and you believe in the future of America, because we'll get through this. But if you're 67, that does quite a different story.
There was a story, I think it was in CNBC, which, make of it what you will, but it talked about how the wealthy, how spending on big ticket items, luxurious items, have been dropping. A sudden pullback among the wealthy could cascade down. So high-end real estate is having its worst year since the financial crisis. Luxury retailers are struggling while discounters like Walmart and Target thrive. At this month's massive Pebble Beach car auctions, the most expensive cars faltered on the block. This story says in the first half of 2019, art auction sales were down for the first time in years. Now, couple that with the fact that the Tiffany reported earnings today, $1.12 per share, beating estimates by 8 cents, which is nice. But if you look, comparable stores in the U.S. were down. The luxury good retailer reported double-digit growth in mainland China. So Tiffany's up, but they're up because of sales in China.
Exactly. The smart money in the U.S. is getting a little concerned. I love to read the section of the Wall Street Journal on Friday called Mansion, because I find it so entertaining that there are like a dozen ranches in Montana and Colorado for sale for like $40 million, $26 million, where the wealthy people have traditionally put their money. I mean, that's the mega rich. And even those things aren't being bought. You wonder whether maybe the rich aren't opting for some chicken money right now, and it might not be wise to follow their example. Liquidity comes as, there's no price for liquidity. That is to say, if you have some money sitting on the sidelines, the rich know that markets go up and down, whether it's art or antique cars or real estate, and they want to be ready to get the bargains during the next crunch. If they're smart enough to be the squirrels that save up their nuts for the rainy day, don't you think you ought to be?
Let's go back overseas. You were talking about Europe earlier. Let's go to Britain, where Boris Johnson will suspend Parliament, delay the opening of Parliament in order to thwart his opponents in Parliament who are trying to create a new Brexit deal. He wants apparently to go to a hard exit Brexit. There's a movement from the rest of Parliament or outside his support that would push through this plan. So he's giving them limited daytime, daylight to do that before the October 31st deadline. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, for most Americans, including myself, I'm not quite sure how the rules of when Parliament is in office happen, and it strikes me as a very kind of abrupt and maybe potentially absurd kind of a move, and the Queen, of course, has to approve. But I'm sure that we in America strike Europeans as also unfathomable. Right. And did you ever notice, maybe some citizen reading, but I was so
Terry, you just went under in the bubble bath there. I can't really hear anything you're saying. Are you better?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I'm right here. Sorry, I'm on a cell phone today instead of a landline. Never mind, maybe that was a good place to stop. But I was thinking that our president and the British prime minister bear a lot of resemblance to each other.
Well, and so it's interesting because by delaying it, then what they do is they delay the Queen's opening, the Queen's address, which, okay. But then by rule, Parliament has to debate the Queen's address for 5 days. So that takes another 5 days out of it. I think they'd end up with 12 days or so before the Brexit exit, the hard exit. And that apparently was Boris Johnson's game. Frank Senator from Crane Chicago Business will be along a little bit later in the program. We'll talk about a number of things in cranes, but one of them is the story that's broke elsewhere as well. Churchill Downs, the company that owns Arlington International Racecourse, is saying that they're not interested in a casino so much anymore, and that they may, in fact, close Arlington International after a couple of years. We'll talk to Frank about that. On a phone line right now is Terry Savage, who she enlightened us with this Obamacare benefit last year, and she's here to tell us again that if you own a small business or work in a small business, there is a great opportunity for you to get health care, a great plan, at not a high cost.
I wanted to do this early this year. You know, in November and December, we get all crowded up with, okay, sign up for Medicare, sign up for Obamacare, sign up. Oh, you know, there are 26 million people, then add their families, who are working for small businesses where the boss does not offer a health care benefit, saying, and understandably so, I can't afford it. And nobody is out telling people about this great special exception, a special period between November 15th and December 15th, when a small business can sign up and get the same best group insurance plan as any other business in the state, and the boss does not have to pay, and only one employee has to sign up in order to make this group plan work.
Okay, so I want you to get to that, but first you said that no one knows about it, and I think this is interesting. Why don't we know about it?
Because, think about this, you're an insurance, a corporate benefits insurance agent. You want to go to these big companies and sell them an employee benefits plan with health insurance, and you get a big commission from the insurance companies. You walk into one of the major insurers and say, I've got five of these little groups. One has three people. One, the owner's on Medicare, but he wants a group plan anyway because he's got a full-time worker that needs benefits. And I've got several of these, and they don't want to see you as an insurance agent again.
They're not going to make any money off you.
There's not enough commission or incentive to sell these plans, but Vesta Benefits Group in Chicago, this really terrific company, Alan Wishner, has helped me every year. He's just on a mission to show small businesses the boss doesn't have to pay, the employee can pay the benefits pre-tax. If you've got a better deal somewhere else, either on your spouse's insurance if you're an employee, or you get a subsidy for the Affordable Care Act, you don't have to sign up for the group plan. But it's a group plan with great access to doctors and hospitals like corporate plans. No, pre-existing conditions are not part of it. And because there's a rush at the end of the year to get this set up, I'm suggesting, the column is up at terrysavage.com, the link to Vesta, V-E-S-T-A, benefitsgroup.com, VestaBenefitsGroup.com is in that column. And I'm suggesting, if you have a small business, you can get a great plan at an affordable cost, and the boss doesn't have to pay.
Okay,
and
so
the employee pays pre-tax, gets to deduct the premium.
So not only that, the employee pays pre-tax, which actually lowers the payroll tax obligation for the boss.
Sure, you've got somebody making $26,000 a year, and they spend a few thousand dollars paying their insurance, health insurance benefit themselves as a pre-tax salary deduction. Well, the boss doesn't have so much salary to pay payroll tax.
So what you need to do, and again, it's no cost to the boss. The boss just needs to sign up for it. It can be as few as one worker. So if you are in a healthcare situation, full-time worker, if you're in a healthcare situation, check out the column, terrysavage.com. Read it up, or read about it. Take it to your employer, or if you're the employer, check it out. This could be a real, I mean, it's a way to offer a great benefit to your employees. And again, if you're the business owner, maybe even save a few bucks.
Absolutely. It'll run in the Tribune on Labor Day. I decided to get a head start and try and introduce small businesses to this great opportunity. You know, I get nothing out of this except the satisfaction of knowing that some people get great plans.
TerrySavage.com. That's where the column is. All right, Terry, listen, thank you for joining us today. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk again next week.
Great, Steve.
Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, Michael Lavatola is in the studio again, co-founder, CEO of Foxtrot Market. And, Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And pretty much you owe your success, don't you think, your frequent appearances on the Wintrust Business Lunch?
It can't be anything else.
I love your story. And, you know, this is a review a little bit, because we talked about this when I think the first time. I think the first time we had you on, you were about to open up a brick and mortar, right?
Exactly.
So you had started with the idea of an online service. You were one of those companies that, quote unquote, curated what you sold, which mm-hmm. meant that it was fine quality, higher priced.
On some things, but lowers on others. And, you know, I mean, really, we were just out there to find the best stuff in a given category.
Right.
So the best ice cream and cookies and wine and all kinds of fun stuff.
And so you built up a community that way.
Yes.
And then you went into, why did you open up a brick and mortar?
For a few reasons. So opening up our own brick and mortar allowed us to carry the products we wanted. So instead of, you know, partnering with existing retailers, we were able to, you know, really actually pick every single product we wanted, which was really important to us. And two, it allowed us to get to know our customers a lot better, right? So when you have customers walking the door every day, you see how they shop, you can ask them questions, and it brought us a lot closer to the, you know, community.
It was, they were also kind of warehouses, weren't they, for the stuff you were delivering?
Exactly, yeah. So beyond the retail business, about, you know, half our revenue comes from e-commerce delivery, and those stores actually act and still do as fulfillment centers for the delivery.
Can you order everything that you can buy?
In the stores? Yes. Yeah. So with the exception of, we have hot coffee to go now too. So yeah, everything in the store is now available online.
Okay. And so you just said that you're still half of your sales are still online or delivery.
Yes.
That surprises me. You've got what, 8 stores now?
Mm-hmm.
So what drives the online sales? I just am still a little surprised by that.
Yeah, so, you know, customers come in, they, you know, see the selection again of wine and craft beer and ice cream and all these, this kind of, all these great products. And then you essentially pay with your app in store, and that sort of introduces you to the e-commerce experience. And then, you know, if it's too cold or too hot or it's
right.
Sunday night and you just don't want to leave, then sometimes getting it delivered is
The joke I used to make was
it's
Saturday night, late at night, you went home and you wanted a bottle of wine. You had someone who would pedal their bike and deliver the bottle of wine late
and then Sunday morning when you need the orange juice to bring you back to life as well. Yes.
And so do you deliver, what are your delivery hours?
From about 8 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Okay. And so 8 stores now.
Yes.
I was telling you off the air, my wife and I just spent 4 days in Lincoln Park just for old time's sake earlier this summer. And we were south of Armitage on Dayton. And right at on Armitage and Dayton, maybe a little west of Dayton, is one of your stores.
Yep, it's at Armitage, and Fremont was store number two.
So what was store number one was in?
In the West Loop.
Okay. And then if you walk south to Wells and North Avenue, and there's another, there was a Foxtrot no matter where I look.
Yeah, so, you know, what we're trying to do, especially in Chicago, is, you know, go find these great corners in neighborhoods across the city and, you know, hopefully bring a little bit of what we're doing to them.
But the Old Town location at Wells and North is something new.
It's more of an evolution from the early store. So, you know, really 1 through 7, you'll see more seating and more focus on the coffee and cafe part of the business. And the Old Town store is really the best example of that. So we've got probably 40 seats in there, full coffee bar, full cafe program, all in addition to the, you know, normal market that
we typically
have. So the
full line, the full product line is there?
Exactly. Yep.
And with the menu?
And
that's the future for you?
Yeah, that's how we see the future. You know, in the mornings and kind of midday, the stores really act as like a great coffee shop and cafe and place to hang out. And then that sort of after work crowd are the folks coming by to pick up wine and bread and all the sort of essentials.
And so the menu there is essentially a brunch menu?
Brunchish, yeah. So, okay. You know, avocado toast and donuts and
really, you do the avocado,
tacos.
You do the cliche?
Got to,
you
have to. Yeah. It's the number one selling thing. How can you not?
Is that true?
And it's delicious, yeah.
And it's the, and which, so I live in Deerfield.
Yes.
I think you grew up not too far from there.
Yep, just north in Lake Forest.
And I see that your bagel sandwiches are imported from Highland Park. At least the bagels are.
Yes, that is very intentional. It took a long time to strike up the partnership. But that's really what we're trying to do.
So we're talking about Once Upon a Bagel up there.
Yes, and that's really what we're trying to do across the whole menu. So, you know, finding the best cookies, and we use Carol's, and the best, you know, donuts, and we do the pasta from Monteverde. So really trying to find the best of things in Chicago and bring them all into one place.
Okay, so you started 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, what, 8 stores?
Got 8 stores now.
And one of those is in Dallas.
Yes.
Another one coming in Dallas later this year.
Yes.
That's fast expansion, isn't it? Especially for a company that didn't think it was going to go into brick and mortar.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we thought that we would, you know, expand the e-commerce side a lot faster, but retail has worked super well for us and has been really synergistic with the online. So we've, you know, sort of doubled and tripled down on retail and see it as a path forward.
And so how does your experience, because I'm interested in, you know, the whole brick and mortar moving to online, you're kind of the reverse. How does your experience compare to others when it comes to this, you know, similar sort of coffee shop or that sort of arena when it comes to online versus?
Yeah, so for us, it all feels really integrated, right? So rather than taking an existing brick and mortar store and then, you know, kind of slapping on a third party delivery service, it's all it's all integrated. So if you order online, you're shopping on our platform, it's getting delivered by our guys and, you know, packed by our employees in the store. So it's a really seamless sort of branded end-to-end experience, and hopefully that increases the quality and, you know, drops the delivery times.
Okay, so let's go to Texas. You've got one open in Dallas, another
yes.
one coming. I would imagine you're focusing on Dallas-centric products there, too?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of the menu is the same across some of these exciting national brands and increasingly our private label, but, you know, we have this amazing queso that is local to Dallas. And, you know, same thing on bread and coffee and craft beer, certainly. So we bring a little bit of Chicago down there, but then try to get
the
best
Dallas.
Well,
they could use a little bit of Chicago.
Everyone could.
You just said private label. What's that about?
Yeah, so, you know, our prepared food is probably the best example of this, where, you know, we have our own commissary and making things fresh every day, but also another category. So I think candy is our best example of that in Chicago.
What's been your biggest surprise now through? It's been a whirlwind, I think. I will speak for you. This has been going really fast, don't you think?
Some days fast, some days not fast enough.
What's been your biggest surprise?
Honestly, just the whole retail side of the business. I mean, I think when we started, we never thought we'd see 40 people sitting in a cafe in a Foxtrot.
Right.
Now it feels really, really natural and is really exciting for us. But, you know, being able to adapt and see what's working and go in that direction has been
You know
helpful.
What? That's probably a pretty good lesson for others trying to start a business, in that you sort of rode a wave. You didn't know where that wave was going to. I mean, the wave didn't take you where you thought you were going to go.
Exactly.
But you like where you ended up.
Exactly, yeah.
Outside money now, too, right? You've got investors.
We do.
And so a lot of times when people have a dream and they get outside investors, they find their dream sort of co-opted by the money people. How's that experience been for you?
it's been really well for us. So we've been, you know, fortunate to partner up with a lot of, you know, sort of the leading consumer investors, and they're investors who can give us a bite or advice about, you know, scaling online growth or opening up in smart retail locations. But they are there to really back us and sort of run the business how we see best.
You ever just say, hey, come on, man, this was my idea, back off?
In different words.
All right, so here we are. It is late August of 2019. A year from now, what are you going to be talking about?
Hopefully some more new stores in Chicago.
What's your goal? How many new stores in the next year?
In the next year, we'll, you know, probably open up 8 to 10.
Okay. Wow. So you're moving.
Yeah. Not just in Chicago.
And again, repeat the fact that it's all about the Wintrust Business Lunch.
It's the only reason for our success.
Michael Lavatola, the co-founder of Foxtrot Market. Great to see you again. I know I will check in again. I promise or threaten, whichever you want to take it. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Startups and emerging technologies are keeping the world moving forward, because sometimes the thinking is incredibly niche, but right there when a larger audience needs it. Or it's simply just a more efficient way of completing an objective. That kind of thinking is top of mind in Illinois, as the state plans to expunge tens of thousands of cannabis convictions. But how? We can thank the California nonprofit Code for America and their program Clear My Record. It's a regional company in Illinois is helping them break out of their shell by recruiting their technology as January 2020 comes up quick. And speaking of what some consider to be sinful products, making and selling spirits just got easier for distillers in Illinois. Governor Pritzker passed a bill that differentiates selling restrictions from larger and smaller distillers. It takes a lot to sell and make a buck if you're a small-scale maker, those who make less than 5,000 gallons, compared to the heavy hitters who already have a share of the market. These were the craft of times. These were the drunkest of times. Bartender! One more. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. You know, we talk usually in this segment about the Daily Gist, the podcast Amy Guth produces for Crane Chicago Business. Frank Sennett from Crane's is on the phone with us now. And I know, Frank, that one of the things she'll be talking about today is this Churchill Downs story. I don't know if you call it a threat or what you call it, but the idea that they might close Arlington International Racecourse.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. We've got some heavy jockeying going on down
there. We go.
Field.
That's what I'm saying. No horsing around.
That's right. The Churchill Downs folks are saying that they may try to move their racing license to another facility. Could be the Quad Cities potentially. They could shut down racing because the way that the video gaming is playing out is not going to be advantageous. To them, that it will put them at a competitive disadvantage with the number of new slots available around the state. And so they may turn their focus more toward a new casino in Waukegan to go with the one they own in Rosemont, the Rivers Casino. And horse racing could be a casualty in the northwest suburbs. And it's, you know, it's a gorgeous place.
Oh,
so that would be too bad.
So, you know, when I first read the story, Frank, I'm reading this through my reporter's eyes and thinking that there is some horsing around here, that, you know, Churchill Downs is just playing to get a better tax situation. That's what they said, you know, mm-hmm. It's too expensive tax-wise. And there may well be that. But also, if you look at it, it looks as if there are some very logical reasons for it to move out of Arlington.
Yeah, and we have some quotes from a guy who does a horse racing industry coverage, the Pollock Report, and he said that the quality of the racing there has been declining in terms of the purses and the horses for years, and so that it may just have been on a slow decline. And yeah, there are some reasons why you know, horse racing is alive. Activity is not as lucrative as casinos.
You know, and I just kind of assumed that it was going, that it was holding steady, not that it was declining. That quote, what struck me was, he said that the purses have dropped so much that they're not even competitive with purses in Iowa, Minnesota, or in Indiana. I mean, you walk by
it sounds
this,
like state fair level kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, you drive by this, you know, this palace on Route 53 or off Route 53, and you think that there's got to be big money there. And it turns out maybe that's just not the case. The other thing is, you mentioned that they own Rivers, which is about 15 miles away from Arlington. So if they were to open a casino there, they would have two properties within 15 miles of each other, which might not make that much economic sense either.
Right. And so if they go to Waukegan, they're further away.
Right. And so we'll see about that. And so they're committed to racing through this year and next year, right? But after 2021 is when this might come up.
As they say, all bets are off.
See, how many of these you've written down? Because I'll try to walk you through the rest of them.
I got like a scroll.
You know, you're a seasoned veteran. I am so not invested in the 100-day report cards for Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, it's a fairly brief snapshot, and our 100-day report card, Greg Hines, is pretty upfront about the fact that it's a kind of a manufactured deadline, and that it's really incomplete, and that we've got a big budget address coming tomorrow, and then of course this CPS potential strike with the teachers union. So there are a couple of big rubber meets the road moments here,
right,
for Lori Lightfoot that are post 100 days
and the next 3 years and 252 days. It's hard to judge. We talked about it on the Mincing Rascals podcast as well. That'll be out later today. I think you can tout your successes after 100 days. I don't know that you could be measured for not meeting your promises after 100 days. There's just too much to do. I was kind of interested that she had an event earlier today talking about it. It's kind of poignant when she talked about the children that she sees, you know, in some of the more dangerous neighborhoods. But earlier in this week, she said, look, that's a Hallmark holiday, this 100 days. She kind of implied she wasn't going to play, and then she played along anyway.
Well, you have to play the game to a certain extent. The one thing that Greg Hines did point out in this, I think pretty comprehensive report is that she has scored early on the political reform front, and that was really taking advantage of, as Rahm always said, never let a crisis go to waste.
Right.
With the Alderman Burke indictment, et cetera, she's been able to help push through some pretty strong ethics reforms in the city council in those early days. And so it showed that she was a little nimble on that. So that was a positive for sure.
Interesting, too, in the Rascals, Eric Zorn, the Tribune columnist, said he gives her credit for sort of taking on some of the invested interest, the alderman or the fraternal order of police or things like that. Hines sort of graded her negatively there, saying that she's alienating some of the players she's going to need down the road. Read that. It's at chicagobusiness.com. Also will come up in the Daily Gist, I'm sure, as well. Frank, good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Wonderful, Steve. Thanks for having me.